A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Badass Women's Hour podcast with me, Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell and Emma Sexton. This week we meet a former professional rugby player turned author and talk to a leading fertility doctor about why it is 1 in 7 couples are experiencing problems conceiving.
Underwear, armpit hair, many imitators, but no one compares.
Badass Women's Hour XL with Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell and Emma Sexton on Talk Radio.
1, 2, 3, 4!
Welcome back to Badass Women's Hour XL. Now, did you know that 1 in 7 couples will find it hard to conceive? Is that because we are just having babies later? Is it because we literally don't know what we're doing? Or is it because previously we would have found it hard to conceive, but we wouldn't have realised that was a problem? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I wonder if all our access to medical knowledge now has made more of us think we should be able to have a baby. Here to answer some of my questions, we have Dr. Hippocrates Saris. Hello, welcome.
Hello.
So you specialise in fertility and you're a member of the Royal College of Obstetricians and also gynaecology. Tell us, why are there so many couples struggling to get pregnant?
Well, that's a very good question. Actually, you almost answered bits of it at the beginning of your introduction when you said that we are leaving things a little bit later. So the average age of women giving birth now is going up and up. And unfortunately, even with modern medical intervention, we can only try to optimise things, but we still have nature that we cannot overcome.
Are you telling me that it's the fact that women are having babies later on in life that is making fertility difficult?
No, it's not as simple as that.
That's a very sensible answer on your behalf.
I would have been very unwise to imply that that was the only reason. It's a combination of things. And actually, you know what? It's not just women. It's also from the male side as well. Mm-hmm. So there's more and more evidence showing that male fertility is declining as well. And actually, although we always used to accuse women that they're getting older, actually men, as they become older, their ability to father children declines as well.
See, I didn't realise this so the other day. Yes. I thought that men's sperm was just good to go, but it's not actually, is it? Their fertility does decline. So
it does decline indeed. It does. And there is this concept which not everybody subscribes to called the adrenopause, which is the equivalent, I guess, in some ways of the female equivalent.
The male menopause. I knew it was a thing.
What is the male menopause or the adrenopause?
The drop in testosterone. Isn't that right, doctor?
Exactly. One of the differences, obviously, between men and women, in that for women, there is an absolute point after which they cannot conceive. With men, there is no such absolute point, but it does decline with time as well.
I'm now obsessed with the idea of the adrenopause potentially explaining my dating life. Does that mean that men's behaviour is changing as their testosterone drops?
Yes, yeah. But to some extent, you're right. Of course, you know, energy and stamina and libido will be associated with testosterone. I'm not really sure I can answer if that really, what that means about your dating life, as you said. And I'll leave it at that as well.
What kind of doctor are you?
There's an amazing theory going around, which is that men in their kind of late 40s, early 50s want to date significantly younger women because that's the point when their testosterone has dropped and so they need more care and nurture. So they want to be with somebody who is more caring and nurturing. Whereas for women, if you're going through menopause at that point, that's the point when your estrogen, progesterone levels are dropping. Yes. Estrogen is dropping.
Yes.
And so theoretically, we're less in baby making mode. So our bodies are less caring, less nurturing. So we have less time for that.
And that's when you go for the toy boys.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it's not that wrong. And there is something fascinating. It has to do with the egg and the sperm. So actually, a sperm, as men become older, becomes more and more damaged and less able to fertilize eggs. And eggs which are younger can repair older sperm. And you can. That's why they can, and that's why older women do. Older men do better from fertility point of view with younger women because the younger eggs can repair the sperm. But
women are amazing.
The other way as well is true. So when you have an older woman whose potentially eggs cannot repair sperm as well, if you have a younger partner who has more healthy sperm, you don't need to repair it as much, so you can do better. So actually, it works both ways.
Amazing. I'm right. 28-year-old, here I come.
Absolutely.
You've been going for a long time, babes.
Nature is fair.
Also, I love this idea that for years and years we've been saying, like, look at Picasso. He had babies in his 80s. No, it wasn't Picasso. It was his super young girlfriend.
With her
amazing eggs.
And
vice versa.
And so what is... I think we've all had friends that have gone through multiple rounds of IVF, and I definitely think as I've got older, conversations around infertility have increased, and I would say out of maybe 10 sets of friends, half of them are trying various fertility treatments. So something has shifted. What, other than age, what else do you think is going on? Is it lifestyle? Should I put down the glass of red wine? What else? What's going on?
I think it's a number of things. I think lifestyle is very important. Definitely, we are living more unhealthy lifestyle. It's not just what we eat, but also is what we do or we don't do. Obviously, we live in cities, which inherently will be more polluted. But saying that, also, it's awareness. I mean, more and more people will talk about their infertility problem because they feel more empowered to do so. Mm. To be perfectly honest, the last thing that most, especially men, will do, they're not going to go to their friends or a dinner party and start a conversation how they can't have children with their partner. If anything, they tend to withdraw from that conversation. I think it's very important to be able to allow people to have open conversations with their friends. And I think that is another reason why more and more people are realizing that the problem is not as insignificant and as one might think.
But the... In addition to that, I think there's also been more by way of advertising. I can't get on a tube at the moment without seeing a come to the London fertility clinic, or fairs,
yeah,
and choose a baby.
Yeah.
Or on, you know, on social media, every other thing, it's that clear blue app, meh, 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 meh. As soon as I hear the noise, it drives me insane because YouTube is assuming that I don't have children and I really need to have children right now, and therefore I need to check my fertility. And so do you think there's also something from a media advertising perspective where we're constantly talking about it and making people hyper alert and
we've
anxious?
We've created a demand for it.
Is it a bit of commoditization, though, as well, of having children?
It's interesting you mention it because there is this controversial sort of concept of a fertility check, and actually what does it mean? Mm. And actually if you look at the investigations that we have, they're not very accurate at be able to predicting your chance if you don't otherwise are trying at that particular moment in time of having children in the future. So there is that sort of concept that you might be scaring people. At the same time, though, it's important to be aware and for people to know what the facts are. So very frequently I will see in my clinic couples in their late 30s, early 40s, not realizing what the chance of success are and thinking also that IVF can overcome everything, and it can't. Mm. So I think it's an important balance of not to scare people, but at the same time, people to be aware that they should actually know what the facts are around fertility and how things do change, unfortunately, with time. As I said at the beginning, we can't overcome nature.
And what are some of the facts then? I didn't realise until maybe 6 months ago that we have less eggs as we get older than we started with. Like, we start with 2 million or something, and then they're less. Yeah. I honestly generally didn't know that.
Yeah, so usually a woman is born with about 1 to 2 million eggs. By the time she starts her periods, she has approximately 500,000, 300,000 eggs. And by the time she finishes her periods at the age of the menopause, let's say about 50, 51, she only would have released around 400, 500 eggs, which doesn't sound a lot, but one egg per month,
so
12 months a year.
Yeah, so yeah, exactly, Natalie. That's what where are they going if we're not?
So they are used up in a useful sort of way, because for every one egg that is released, there is a number of them that compete in order for them to, for the best one to come out. A bit like in the sperm, there's a million of sperm in an ejaculate and they all compete. And women, eggs do the same, but they do it inside the female body. And, you know, they're not friends with each other. They compete. It's not a sorority. It's not a friendliness. You know, they want to be become a baby.
It's not the vampire in there.
No, they want to become a baby. So there's a very big attrition for each one egg that is released. There is quite a few that have to be used up, and that's why all the eggs are used up. But also it's not just the numbers, it's also the quality of eggs, as opposed to sperm, which is constantly produced. Because women are born with the eggs they're ever going to have, they age the same way that the rest of our body ages. So the actual quality and ability of an egg to be able to make a healthy baby goes down with time as well.
Interesting. What do you think about the controversy that's been around single women not being able to apply for IVF? And do you ever treat single women privately for...
Hold on, can we not?
Not on the NHS.
Not on the NHS, no.
Oh. No, and I do treat women privately, and I think that a discussion about being able to treat women on the NHS should be had. And actually, just recently, just 1 week ago, I had a meeting with our local commissioners to talk exactly about offering fertility treatment to single women on the NHS. And some of the arguments that have been used about not offering are actually, frankly, I think, quite ridiculous.
Are they? What are the arguments? What's the pushback on it?
Well, one argument was that single women don't make as good parents as being a couple, which I think is actually...
Wow. Because couples don't break up?
Yeah.
Well, I don't agree with this particular sort of argument, which is why I think there should be a discussion and definitely debunking myths like that.
Mm. And going back to the point you were making earlier around IVF doesn't work for everyone, I just assumed it did. So what are the scenarios where it wouldn't?
Well, sometimes it's just bad luck. I mean, IVF, by and large, works between 1 in 3 to 1 in 4 times, let's say. It can be a range anywhere from 50-50 all the way down to less than 5%. The vast majority of that will be because of the change of the age. So the older woman is, the more likely the IVF cycle is to be unsuccessful. Beyond that, there are some fundamental reasons that things might not work. So incredibly poor sperm or egg quality, for example, or abnormalities in the womb that cannot be rectified. So some things we cannot change. And frankly, sometimes we just don't know. Mm. It would be quite arrogant of us as doctors to assume and to pretend that we know everything. We don't. And every day, every month, there are new discoveries and we change our understanding about fertility.
So you can successfully match, this is my technical language, match the sperm with an egg, but it's not always the case that that will then result in a baby. But the process of the sperm and the egg, that bit always happens.
Yeah, I think one can imagine a bit like this. With IVF, we try to optimize things. We align the stars to make a line. But by the end of the day, if the stars are not there, we'll never be able to align them. So we do not create life. We do not create babies. The egg and the sperm create the babies. All we do is just bring them together. So fundamentally, if they're incorrect, if they're abnormal, we will not be able to have the desired effect.
Mm. What do you think of the idea that by allowing women to have babies later and later on in life, we're essentially slightly playing God and potentially setting up kids for dealing with old age illness, potentially death at a much younger age?
Well, I think, again, it comes back to, you know, how would we find a family? Let's even not think about IVF, but we have children who are brought up by grandparents, for example, mm-hmm. and we wouldn't consider that to be something abnormal. And also, we are living much longer life, so what is old is different to what it was potentially 20 years ago considered old. And there is evidence to show that older parents do not make worse parents. If anything, the opposite might be true.
And finally, if a woman is thinking of coming to you for IVF, what are kind of one or two things that you would tell her before to kind of, yes, put herself in the best possible state for it?
That is a difficult question. I think trying to be healthy without being extremes, of course, minimizing alcohol intake, not smoke, have a healthy lifestyle and try to have a healthy weight as well. For the man as well, as it's not just for the woman, it always takes two. And beyond that, I think is trying to be open-minded and to try to possibly not read too much what's on out there on the internet. There's a lot of misinformation out there, a lot of opinions and beliefs, but not facts.
Thank you so much. Dr. Ipocrates Saris, it's been lovely chatting to you. Thank you for coming into Badass Women's Hour XL.
Badass Women's Hour XL on Talk Radio.
She'll get you talking.
Welcome back to Badass Women's Hour XL. The reason that we have the Bill theme tune is that we have a real life police officer in the studio with us. Welcome Lee Cockburn to Badass Women's Hour.
Welcome. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. It's actually Cockburn. My brothers just said they've said Cockburn.
It's
Cockburn, but it's a silent CK. Coburn. But you know what? Thank goodness. Thank goodness it's silent.
How many times have you had to explain that? Because you used to be a rugby player, so that's like
350,000 times. I used to swim before, and they said, "There's Leanne Cockburn," and I would say, "It's Lee Cockburn."
So you're now a police officer, but before that, you've had a career in international sport. Tell us about that.
I played rugby. I've now played for 29 years, but I played for Scotland for 15 years in the number 4 shirt and got 77 caps. We were the first team to play ever in 1993 for Scotland, beating Ireland on Valentine's Day. It was called the Valentine's Day Massacre, but we only beat them 10-0. But yeah, and then I played thereafter until 2006, where I left the team. Not through my choice, but you know what? If I hadn't left, I wouldn't have had my children. So every cloud and everything happens for a reason.
What do you think about women's rugby now? Do you feel like things are changing in a good way? Do you feel like women's rugby is getting more support than recognition?
Yeah, it's leaps and bounds away from 1993. Paid for our shirts, paid for accommodation, paid for everything. Whereas now you've got full contracts for women and it's just really come on. And, you know, people are taking women more seriously because there was the not taking women seriously, and I said, "Well, look at the size of me. I'm 6'1".
Yeah.
I'm actually nearly 17 stone, but you know, I carry it well. I think I'm quite heavy.
What difference? Because that's a struggle with women's sport, isn't it? Is that, you know, women are having to work twice as hard because a lot of them have got full time jobs. They're having to you know, raise funds to pay for everything. If you were actually paid to do rugby professionally at that time, what impact do you think that would have had on your performance and you all as a team?
I think everyone would have played, a lot better. But I have to say, for Scotland, for the girls, it's not the size of the dog, it's the size of the fight in the dog.
Yeah.
Because we beat England twice and they were quite shocked that we actually did. So were we. It was 1998. And then 1999, we won the first Five Nations in 1998. That's how old I am. I'm 51. Yeah. But we've not beaten them since 1999. So
you left and that was it. All went downhill.
It was because I left, clearly. No, there was better players than me, definitely.
And so from sport, were you always a police officer?
No, I worked in a leisure centre for 13 years. I was a duty manager at the Royal Commonwealth Pool in Edinburgh. I loved that job. But they moved me to a centre with no swimming pool. So I said, well, I'll join the police then. So I did. And I got in at 32, I joined the police.
Wow, okay. And so how did you reconcile, you know, one career and one life with a new one? We were speaking earlier to someone that's had 25 different jobs before the age of 25. But it's not common for people to shift
Big career changes.
It was a
hard career change. I have to say, what you see on the television and what you actually do is a completely different thing. They don't tell you all the things you're going to have to look at frequently and how close you're going to have to look at them and just where people store things and just the things that you deal with. You know, women have two suitcases, men have one, and then all the wee things that they take in their little special bag. It's like, oh my goodness, I didn't think I'm going to have to look. But in the police, there's so many, you do so many good things and you save so many nice people. Mm. Some people hate you, but you know, the only ones that hate you are the ones you're chasing. So. Yeah. The majority of people tend to need us a wee bit, and I'm glad because I'm proud to serve. Absolutely.
Do you specialise in a particular area, or are you just
frontline? I used to do public order. You know, helmets and shields. I did that for 14 years. I'm still trained, but I need a knee replacement, so I'm not allowed to do that yet until I get that fixed. Because I'm getting an osteotomy, that'll be quite sore, but I'll be able to run again. So all good.
Being frontline at kind of big things, I'm thinking big anything from kind of big sporting events to big political unrest. How scary is that? Because we always, generally when it gets reported in the media, it's always, I think there's a bit of a spin towards police as the baddies, people as the good people.
Police are always the baddies. But we're not actually the baddies.
Scary, yeah.
I was in the G8 and I have to say at one point there was 400 plus of them in front of us and we had 26 and it was pitch dark, and I went, oh my goodness, we're quite outnumbered here in the middle of the night. We did a 25-hour shift, and we were doing running lines on a motorway on the M9 in Stirling. So it was very interesting, but one or two times I was a bit scared, I have to say.
I was going to say, how do you cope with that? Because every day you're going to work, and you are putting yourself at risk. You're putting your life at risk. Do you consciously think about that? Like, how do you deal with that?
I'm a sergeant just now, so there is a lot more clerical than used to be. But I am out, I don't get frightened. If you were frightened, you couldn't do the job. Mm. You've just got to react to whatever happens and hope it's not something that's going to not let you go home at the end of the evening.
But what about, to that point, you know, having a partner at home, every day when you leave, is there not a thing of, yeah, I'm going out to save people. I'd walk in every day and be like, hey.
Well, my female partner's in the police as well, but she's licensing. But she does have to go out into bars and other things like that. She has been frontline. She's dealt with axe-wielding horrible people as well. And I've had people punch me in the face and knock me out and try and steal my baton and things like that. And I just went, I got a half day, so it was super.
She's in the force as well?
Yeah, she's right behind. Okay, she's much smaller, 5'4", pretty police, whereas I'm quite burly, scary police, so it's probably I'm built for being in the police. I'm quite, I just look at folk, I appear intimidating, but I'm quite social working.
So there was no kudos for going off and saving lives, but you know,
she just goes, cheerio.
Was there a sense of I don't know, just an acknowledgement about the work that you do? I often think about people that are in emergency response, just that it's not easy, but you do it every day like it is. It's not something that everyone can do. Not everyone can.
Not at all. Emily used to be in the inquiry office, which deals with death all the time, and Emily doesn't have a sense of smell. So Emily dealt with a rather horrible death when it was practically liquid. And she came back and I went, oh, she goes, oh, do I smell? I went, oh my goodness, you're going to have to go in the shower. Because we do deal with a lot of deaths. Yeah. As a sergeant, I have to go, if any death that's happened on my shift in my area, I have to go and make sure there's nothing more sinister, as in it's not a murder or anything like that. Every death.
Do you get used to seeing dead people?
5 a day is my most. Lots of dead people.
So is it just normal to see a dead person now?
Yeah. Well, you've got
how
to
many dead people do you have to see before it becomes normal?
About four.
Really?
Well, but it's never normal. It's not normal because of the families and the sadness. That's never normal.
No.
But the body never shocks me. Sometimes the smells and the situation that's created that. And you've got to turn people over. And if they've been there a little while, little pieces stay behind. And it's not ideal.
But like psychologically, though, dealing with some of these situations, you know, like how do you prepare yourself to... prepare yourself to cope with that and learn to cope with that, or do you not?
And did rugby help? Like, because there's a resilience. Yeah. So I'm trying to get into your deepest inner
psychoanalyzing you.
After the majority of deaths, I'm really sad. One, the saddest one, the old man that's lost his partner, and I'll go to my police car and I'll be sobbing because I just feel the pain of the person. Or parents or whoever that, you know, it's heartbreaking. But you do your job, you deal with the body. It's the least worrying piece of it. It's the sadness that goes with it. And that I'm still a softie. I don't look like one, but I am a complete soft person. Mm. And it breaks my heart that someone's lost someone, especially the earlier, you know, the younger days. It's just...
Does it keep life in perspective for you, though? If you're dealing with that every day, I mean, most of us are not, you know, we get caught up in our, you know, our lives and our own little drama. But when you're seeing, you know, I don't know, 5 dead people in a day, does it keep your world in perspective?
It does very much, and it stops me saying I hate getting old, because the alternative's quite horrible.
Yeah.
And, you know, appreciate every minute of your life. We all assume we might be getting 70. That's not on the cards necessarily. Mm. You might have 10 more minutes, you just don't know it, so you've got to embrace it and enjoy every single minute you've got. And being 52, I'm counting down, but still, I'm hoping for at least another 30. Hopefully, but
we are going to keep chatting to Lee, because not only is she a rugby player turned police officer, she's also turned crime novel author, bringing her own experiences to the page. We're going to be chatting to her about that coming up next here on Badass Women's Hour XL.
The Fempire Strikes Back. Badass Women's Hour XL on Talk Radio.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states.
United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back to Badass Women's Hour XL. Sorry, I thought there was going to be some music. There wasn't. And also, we've been talking about what happens when you meet a baddie with Lee Coben.
Say that again, Lee.
Well, as I said, my baddie in my first book is more bad than anyone that I've ever met. But I have to say, the one or two, maybe three, really bad people that I've met or people that make me really uncomfortable, you feel it. It's an instinct.
Really?
And you know, and your hair stands on the back of your neck and you know that they're not telling you they're going to do anything horrible to you. You just can feel the badness oozing from them. So, yeah, not too many. In 19 years, I'd say maybe three that made me really uncomfortable.
So I found it interesting. Many, many years ago, I thought I wanted to be a criminal barrister and I went and did some work experience, a couple of different work experiences with various criminal barristers and got to hang out with various criminals that they were defending. And I felt you could always, even the ones that were like charming and lovely and great fun and I had a really nice time with them, there was something they would say or do and you suddenly go, oh, okay, you are charming and lovely, but you're also 6'4" and used to be a driver for the Cray brothers. So I've just got to remember that while we're having a nice chat about Sunday lunches, there is another side to you. Lee, you're now an author as well. How much of police life goes into the books?
The humour goes into the books. It's very much fiction. My books are very sexy, very violent, very, very violent. Very graphic.
Sexy and violent.
Sexy and violent. Well, you're either getting murdered or loved or some other hideous violation. But the main theme is good versus evil. Okay. It takes a wee while in book one and... I feel a bit harsh on the poor ladies. And it was a woman that made my first chapter that, but... that bit more horrific. And I wish I hadn't. I wish I'd left it how it was. But thrilling, gripping.
How did you get into writing? Yeah.
I read a book that was 200 pages and it was just thoroughly dull and he's a multimillionaire. And I thought, oh my goodness, that's not very exciting.
I'm going
to write one how I'd like to read one.
Yeah.
So I'd like some sex, I'd like some violence. I'd like some more sex and then some more violence. And then gripping thrilling from page one to page 333. No dull padding, no over description about the cup. Maybe a more description about the lovely person with no clothes on. It was more like everything I like in life. Lots of it.
Love it. Love it. Well, this isn't good enough, so I'm going to do my own.
Yeah. But no. There's other people that will love that book, but I didn't. I thought, dull-o, yeah. I think I'll write my own.
And this is your third book you're on now?
Yeah, I've just finished book three and I've started book four.
Wow.
She is horrible in book four. I thought I'd have a right
so
good...
So it's the same character in each one now?
No, different criminals in each one. Different. So the first one's an evil, horrible rapist. The second one's a vigilante. The next one's human trafficking and a drug lord. Mm. And the next one's quite an evil young lady.
Mm. Yeah, and do you write it from the perspective of the villain then?
I write it from, the villain and the two police officers. There's a lovely, strikingly beautiful gay female and a very, very handsome, very great lover male. It's a fiction book. Yeah. And I'm only kidding, young men out there, I'm only kidding. Yeah, I'm kidding. But no, my characters are very aesthetically beautiful because of the type of things they get up to.
And... I mean, so again, so I feel like rugby player, swimmer, police officer, author, creating these sexy but violent stories. We're getting a sense, Lee, of what's going on in that mind. How do you decide to make things happen? I almost feel like you just take life on, and does that come from being a sportswoman at the beginning of your career, just making things happen, getting on with it?
I don't know. My dad said, not everybody's like you, and I'm like, yeah. What do you mean by that? And I was like, oh, really? And the more I think about it, how my character, I'm just this creature of, I don't know what I'd call myself. I can't help myself. I'm like, happy, 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 joyous. Yeah, yeah. And then I write hideous books and then happy. And I'm a mother of two beautiful 9-year-old boys, and they are the biggest joy of my life. I don't write when I'm anywhere near them. I couldn't write for 2 years when Emily and I had a baby each, 3 months apart to the same donor.
I mean, I have to ask about this because this is amazing, because you and your partner decided you were going to have a baby.
At 41 and 42.
At what point did you always decide we're going to have two babies together? Did you decide you want to have two? Did one of you get pregnant and then you were like, actually, while we're doing this, we might as well go through it together?
No. I was 38 when I gave up sport, and I thought, well, I'm worried about my parents not being here, and I'm worried that I've not got children. So I thought, well, let's try one, shall we? Can't stop one, but I'll go. Yeah. And then because we're both older, we couldn't wait 2 or 3 years between. So we both tried it at the same time, and we fell pregnant 3 months apart with the 49 pence boot syringe. Cheapskates, yeah, we're from Scotland.
Again, making life happen. I love it.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm coming back to it because we had a conversation earlier today about women wanting to be entrepreneurs but not having the confidence to do it, or not necessarily seeing themselves there to do it. You didn't see lots of women playing rugby, but you did it anyway. You read a book and you thought, meh, not for me. I'm going to write my own. And now you're on book number 4. So again, I'm going to go back. What is it? What's the thing? What's your secret sauce?
I'm just a really happy person. I'm not,
You're just fearless. Are you just fearless at taking risks? Are you just
scared of heights, so I don't like this 14th floor thing.
Right,
that's
going on.
But I'm going to go over to the window and look out. But I'm not fearless. I'm just, I like to do things. I mean, when someone asked me to play rugby at the beginning, I went, oh, no, I'm not doing that. But then 6 months later, Sue Brody did ask me again, and I went, OK, I'll give it a wee shot. And it was really brilliant, the decision and the doors that opened, not necessarily open, but just the people you met and the experiences we had. 3 World Cups, 4 European Championships. We won the European Championships in 2001.
How old were you when you took up rugby?
22.
So, and you'd been a swimmer before that?
Yeah, for 13 years.
So how different was it going from a sport that is kind of you in your lane, looking ahead, doing your thing, to a sport which, A, is a team sport, so there's 15 of you on the pitch, you've all got to work together, and also a sport where nobody's crashing into you when you're swimming in your lane, are they? Nobody's trying to take you down.
Well, you do occasionally get a slap in the head. You get a fist back in their head because you think, move over, or you get your finger stuck in the plastic lane, you're like, oh. But other than that, it's really
never
sore.
About that.
It's horrific. Or you tumble, turn too close to the wall and break your ankle. Yeah, all these things are lovely. Or when you dive off the boards, not the boards, the blocks, when we were younger, didn't matter if the water was less than a metre. Back then, when there was no health and safety, your knees would get scraped and it's like, on you go, and you're higher up. It's like, oh. I loved swimming, but it was harder to go from swimming to rugby because you're supported, your weight's supported. And I was really slim when I played rugby. When I started running, my ankles were like sort of old cankly ankles, but then I had to go for physiotherapy to change from one sport to the other because I was swimming up to 5 hours a day.
Wow.
Just to be okay at swimming. Whereas I joined the rugby, within 3 weeks I'm in the Scotland squad because I'm just ginormous. So I said, you're great at being big. So you can be in you come. And from then on, and then obviously we did start training harder and did start playing well, but it was so good. So best decision ever. Thanks.
So what other stuff do you want to do? It sounds like, you've been doing all these things and you nailed your writing and you're still doing that. What else? What other stuff are you going to do? Is that it now? Are you like, okay, I'm going to do my police, I'm going to be a great parent, I'm going to write my books, that's it, I'm done.
I don't sleep an awful lot, so I don't know. Okay. We maybe get 4 hours sleep a day at
do
the very
Do you
most.
One of those
Well,
ones,
no, I'd much rather have loads more, but I do night shifts, pack shifts, early shifts, take the kids to school. Yeah. But I don't know what else I'm going to do. I've not thought about it yet.
Yeah.
Maybe when I get down from here, I'll go, what can I do next? I'm going to write 5 books. I'll finish at 5, unless I make loads and loads of money. We'll see. But I don't. Yeah. It's not about the money. It's just been about a little bit more comfortable and not taken away from the children. Because at the moment, I haven't made a lot of money. In fact, I've not made any.
Do you sell them through a publisher? Did you self-publish?
I'm self-published, which means you have to pay up to £3,000. The first one was £4,250, and each has been £3,000 so much. So since then, and then there's outlay and what you get back, and what you get back doesn't appear to be what you seem to be selling. So I've actually spoken to J.K. Rowling, and she did say, she lives a mile away from me, by the way.
Does she?
Yeah, she does. I wave at her house every day.
Yeah, security guard. Goes,
but no, she said book sharing and the inability to see the royalties that you're actually right at the beginning when you're starting off. You have no power of seeing what you should be earning. So who knows?
Right.
I'll take my £80 every six months. But hopefully this next book will make some money. So we'll see.
Yeah,
just to put it back in. To the kids and
yeah,
wow, you sold it to us.
Yeah,
you sold it to us. Sex and violence, all our favourite things. Luke Coleman, thank you so much. Demon's Fire is the name of the new book. Is it out now?
It came out on the 7th, and the ones before that, Devil's Demise, is the first one. You've got to read them in order. It's a wee series. And then the next one's Porcelain Flesh of Innocence, where retribution happens much, much quicker.
Wow.
Sorry, book one.
It needs to be a Netflix series.
I think it does.
Luke Coleman, thank you so much for coming and joining us about Alice Mazar. It's been a joy chatting to you. Thank you. 1, 2, 3, 4!
This has been the Badass Women's Hour podcast with me, Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell and Emma Sexton. If you want to hear more from us, you can come follow us on social media at Badass Women's Hour, HR, or leave us a review and tell us how much you love us. We really need to feel the love. 5 stars should do it.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.